Good morning. My name is Karen, and I'll be your conference facilitator today. Welcome to First Choice Healthcare Solutions' First Quarter 2018 Financial Results Webcast. At this time, participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow management's remarks. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. A replay of today's call will be available on First Choice's website later today and will remain posted there for the next 90 days. I would also like to remind everyone that any forward-looking statements made during the call are protected under the Safe Harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation and Reform Act. Such forward-looking statements are based upon current expectations, and there can be no assurance that the results contemplated in these statements will be realized. Actual results may differ materially from such statements due to a number of important factors and risks, which are identified in our press release and our annual and quarterly reports filed with the SEC. These forward-looking statements are based on information available to First Choice today, and the company assumes no obligation to update statements as circumstances change. Now, at this time, it is my pleasure to introduce Chris Romandetti, Chairman, President, and CEO of First Choice. Mr. Romandetti, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Karen. And I'd like to thank everybody for participating on our Q1 2018 call and taking the time. I'd also like to note that today Phil Keller, our CFO, will be giving us a financial update on our numbers and an overview. So we'll begin a little bit with the financial performance during the first quarter of Q1 and the outlooks and goals and balances of the year. After our prepared remarks and after Phil's prepared remarks, we'll then turn it over at the end to what we plan to do as our goals for 2018 and then come back in with some questions and answers at the end. So we're very pleased with the progress we've made. Given our positive momentum, we believe First Choice is well positioned to continue its revenue and EBITDA growth over the upcoming quarters. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Phil Keller, our CFO, to get into the numbers. Phil?
Thank you, Chris, and good morning, everyone. With our 10-Q filed yesterday and our press release hitting the wire this morning, I'm not going to read the financials to you, but just hit on a couple of the key highlights. Our total revenues for the quarter were $8.8 million, increasing approximately 14 percentage points. Our net patient revenue increased 15% to $8.2 million, our best quarterly performance ever. The increase in revenue was spread equally across our First Choice Medical platform and the VAC Center, with sales growth of 17 and 16% respectively. Sales at our Crane Creek Surgery Center were essentially flat during the quarter. I'm pleased to report our income from operations increased 140% to $268,000. What is exciting to report is the operating profit came from all three of our segments. Taking a majority interest and complete management control of the surgery center was, as expected, the right decision. After four consecutive quarters of losses, we were profitable in the first quarter at the surgery center and are continuing to improve the case mix and cost structure at the center and expect profitability to continue to increase. As a result of the sales increases and operating improvements at the surgery center, our non-GAAP adjusted EBITDA was $760,000, a 51% improvement over the prior year. Turning to our balance sheet and our revenue cycle processes, we are continuing to work on improving that and redesigning our front-end processes and collecting our past due balances. As we mentioned on our year-end call, one of the areas of concern was the VA and the TRICARE had essentially stopped paying us. We've broken through the bureaucracy there and are now getting paid quicker and timely and have been assigned an RN case manager to handle our older balances. In the last month or so, we've been paid approximately $300,000 of claims that were over a year old and are continuing to reprocess older claims with our assigned case manager. Another $400,000 worth of old claims was just recently submitted last week, and we'll expect those payments to start flowing in the next 2 to 3 weeks. With that, I'll turn the call back over to Chris.
Thank you, Phil. For one thing I wanted to do there is maybe just clarify one point. The overall profitability was the number Phil just gave you of the 700 and change in EBITDA was for all operations contributing. I thought I might have heard it say it was specifically to Crane Creek Surgery Center. So a clarification to that so that we would know. So with moving on, thank you, Phil, and I appreciate that. Before I talk about our goals and plans for 18, I'd like to do a little more of a review for those new investors that are on the call and an overview of what we've accomplished also in Q1. In March, we closed our strategic partnership with Steward Healthcare, the largest private hospital operator in the United States. This enables us to expand the First Choice Orthopedic Spine and Delivery platform into not only Steward's network of hospitals, but across the country where we see it to be fit. As part of this transition, we received $7.5 million of investment from Steward in exchange for 5 million shares of common stock. The successful utilization of Steward's facilities has served as an indication that the company plans to expand its partnership with First Choice. Partnership update, indicating the review process and the rollout of the unique delivery platform among Steward's facilities right now has given us the ability that a little bit later in the call we'll talk about how we're going to expand into other geographic areas with them. Given their vast footprint, it's really up to us to provide a great opportunity not only for First Choice, but if we do this properly and work in conjunction with Steward, it'll give us the ability that one day we think will allow us to enter into their 34 other hospitals on their nationwide footprint. The next thing it allows us to do is it allows us to help renegotiate some of our third-party payer contracts. These are the contracts with the Blues, the Uniteds, the Cignas. We're almost, I can't say today, but we're very close on increasing some of those contracts as we speak, as we are showing that our approach to doing surgeries and taking care of patient care, we are literally lowering their cost by getting patients turned around quicker with less time spent in rehab outpatient centers, inpatient centers. Their GOP allows us to have our purchasing power increase up to, in some cases, 10%. I've seen some equipment cost savings that could be as high as 20%. At Crane Creek, like Phil has just mentioned, I think it's really important to know that really over all of last year, not Q1 to Q1, but when we saw the management team heading south after Q1 of last year, it enabled us to recognize a $700,000 plus loss for last year. So going into Q2, 3, and 4 of last year, it was inevitable we had to make that change, which, as Phil indicated, we did. So with doing that, and on January 1, taking over 25% ownership, without really having the capability to get our administrator in there until almost three-quarters of the way through January, they were still capable of turning Q1 around to be profitable. Although as small as it is, that's the first basic step in turning it around to be part of our performance model. So that again, going back over, we're very pleased with the results. Moving ahead on some of our other milestones and outlooks, we are looking forward now to taking the footprint of our facility and expanding it into other areas. In a few minutes, I again will expand on that and where we're going. So I want to go over a couple other basic numbers so you can see in some departments where some people like to hear this granular part. Half the team calls me and says, Chris, it's too much. But I thought I'd just give you some highlights. In 2017, our physical therapy department saw 3,800 patients. In Q1 of this year, we saw over 10,000. We are just hitting 1,000 per week, and our plans are to open up a new facility again in under 90 days. Our MRIs are up 27%, hitting almost 1,200 MRIs in Q1. Surgical cases for last year, although it was lower of 719 due to the fact we had our colonel still out of overseas deployed, in 2018 we achieved 950 cases. We're proud to also announce that for April, we're at 350 completed cases, which, again, on a run rate, which you'll hear me talk a little bit more about, would put us at about 4,200 cases on a run rate if we continue what we're doing in April. So surgical cases for 17 were a total of 3,300, and as I've just mentioned, we're currently on a run rate of a little over 4,000. Our range that we gave, which I say is almost a little bit like guidance, is that in our last call I mentioned that we were going to do 5,000 to 6,000 cases by year end, being on our run rate to establish our January 2019, clearly with 5,000 to 6,000 cases. And today I'm going to raise that to say that I'm closer to 6,000 than I am 5. So I'm expecting and doing my goals and budgeting on starting at 6,000 cases in January. Turning Crane Creek from its loss of 700 that I mentioned while increasing its capabilities, we've also increased capabilities of doing cases there. We're currently expanding the revenue recognition department. As Phil has mentioned, these are funds that have been sitting there. We need to work harder to get them, and that's an ongoing basis for expansion. So our board is meant to review the potential board members to fill the 3 open positions that we've indicated. We said we'd have 5 people, 3 minimum, 3 would be independent. We've officially interviewed numerous members, and we're proud to say that the board has put out offering packages to 3 new members, 2 in which have been suggested by Stewart, and 1 which we identified independently. All 3 of these will qualify as independent directors, and we're hoping that this will happen shortly. Like I say, the packages went out. They're filling out all their paperwork. Unless there's a glitch in that, we don't see any problem. This alone with Sheila Schwitzer, that would achieve us having 4 independent members, 4 out of the 5, including myself. The next is, for the news we've all been excited for and wanting to hear, is that with the recommendation from management to the FCEHS board, the board has officially approved and given the authority to expand and implement a new FCEHS platform into Vero Beach, Sebastian, Florida, which is located in Indian River County. This is a county that our strategic partner, Stewart, has a hospital facility located within the county, and it is our intention to work closely to maximize the efficiencies of both our operations while offering the best capable patient care in that county. So how do we go about doing that? We've identified our property. We're prepared to enter into an LOI. This would be a footprint that would be about 18,000 square foot on our initial facility, and this will house our physicians, our orthopedics, and our PT. We'll also be expanding into 2 other PT locations within their county. One thing that's unique about Indian River County, south of us, this is in the 3rd district payer that's indicated under the south region of Medicare. So some of the base rates, which 35% of our business is done by Medicare, is approximately 7% higher in reimbursement. As I mentioned, we'll be replicating our system down there while capitalizing on doing our surgeries at the local hospital, which we are going to do the best we can to run parallel with Stewart while we're implementing this. I believe when completed, not only in the new county, that this will allow us to do approximately 3,000 additional surgeries in Indian River. When putting that on top of our run rate of 4,000 in Brevard, that's close to 7. And that's why today I comfortably feel good that although it's pretty far out, I'm saying somewhere in 19 we'll be approaching 8,000 surgeries out of Florida operations. Once again, I'd like to really thank our management team, because just saying we're going to implement another unit or going to a different territory is easy to talk on a phone, but to have the hundreds of hours that it's taken already to go down, interview the docs, interview the facilities, look at all the operations, make sure that we can have our contracts overlap, and now go down and achieve implementation. One thing I'd like to expand on a little bit about that is, what does implementation mean? We've been discussing and meeting with several orthopedic surgeons in the Vero area, and we'll be proud to be announcing those as they start to come towards us. But we have offers out now to 3 surgeons, with many more we believe to be coming. Some of these are surgeons that are doing in excess of 600 surgeries. Some are 300 to 400. But these are people that are looking at and recognizing our footprint in Melbourne. They speak. It's a small state. They speak to our, I'm sure, our doctors, and as colleagues, they see that our operation makes their life easier to work within our realm of our platform. So today what we'll be discussing or wrapping up with and discussing here is, again, I wanted to compliment the management team. And like I said, to Chris Jones, who has been going down weekly and meeting. It's been months in the making to Phil Keller to run the numbers to make sure when we go down there that we can have a positive activity. You know, when you go down into one of these territories, our goal is to open up. Not many businesses can say this. We're literally will be profitable day one. We don't have to go there to just start ramping up a three-year exchange. We need to go down there with from 1,000 to 2,000 surgeries of surgeons hired, open our doors up, and have them running on the ground. And then in that part, do all their diagnostics that are supporting around that. The business is there. If you're not familiar with Vero, it's right opposite Hutchison Island. It's a great community with a lot of potential of retirees that come down. It will be more seasonal than our Central Florida Brevard location due to the fact that they get a heavy influx from snowbirds that utilize Vero Beach and Hutchison Island that like to come down and have their surgeries done and recoup in the nice weather in the wintertime. So, again, thank you to the team. I'd like to thank all the investors that have been patient waiting for us to do this. We really feel that this is a great opportunity to expand our platform. This will let us be in three Stewart locations while at the same time a little over 100 miles of geographic area between the two counties, which will be a great footprint for us to demonstrate replicating our platform into a new system. So with that, Karen, what I'd like to do is turn it back over for questions and answers, which I'm sure everybody's anxious.
Absolutely. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you're using a speakerphone, we ask that while posing your question, you just pick up your handset to provide favorable sound quality. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question or comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. Please hold as we poll for questions. And our first question comes from Bill Sutherland from Benchmark Company. Please state your question.
Oh, thanks. Hey, Chris and Phil. I wanted to get a little bit more color on the expansion plan. So, Chris, is the timing kind of, within the next quarter or two to sort of get the facility up? I mean, I'm sure it's just a leasehold in an existing building, or am I incorrect on that?
Right. Good to hear from you, Bill. Yes, we're looking at a leasehold improvement, and that's why I'm not giving guidance specifically on what date the surgeries start, but with Vero and with what we're doing up here in Sebastian, that's why today I went from 5,000 to 6,000 surgeries. So in my estimate, I don't know if they'll be sat by September or by November, but somewhere in that timeline, it takes 3 months, 3 to 4 months right now for the build-out to be prepared the way we want it. It'll take 3 to 4 months for all credentialing operations to be done. So if that's a more specific timeline, it'll be between 4 months and year-end that everybody should be housed into their territory. We currently now have two offices down there. So we've tentatively have been down there in a very small presence to make sure that the community and we could do business and we looked at it. So we now are expanding. We're not new to the community, but to officially put a full-fledged facility in right now, I'm expecting it to take 4 months, opening up between that and year-end and having our doctors sat.
And just want to understand the relationship with Stewart in this expansion and also the other hospital. You're working with their surgeons as well, correct?
Yes.
And so when you obviously they won't be your employee model that you utilize with your own group of surgeons. You'll just, in the case that you're doing your surgeries with the Stewart surgeons in the Stewart ORs, I'm kind of curious on the revenue there. Is that going to be the facility fee that you normally get in your own ORs?
Yeah, maybe I'm not understanding the questions. You know, Stewart's an investor in our company. They own 15% of our stock. It's a great strategic relationship. They have nice facilities. They have great facilities. There are other facilities. We do business at Health First. We have our own surgery center. What we're doing is independently going into this market down there so that we can be prepared to have our surgeons capitalize on doing their surgeries when applicable at their facilities, and they still have their own surgeons, which are great and loyal to them. So it's I think they have two or three down there, and that'll be their loyalty to their people, which is Steward, and we plan to put from three to five down there. So we're going to go down there and implement our model, which will run totally separate from the Steward employed folks.
See, I thought you were – that's okay. I was wrong. I was thinking you were – that control tower concept that you talked about last time of getting the right surgeries and the right facilities, I thought that was part of this deal.
Well, it is. If we have a surgery that needs to be done and we bring in 2,000 surgeries and they already are doing thousands of surgeries, somebody's got to monitor that traffic. So we will work closely with them to maximize their OR times and to maximize our needs, and that's where that relationship should, you know, have to. It's great to have harmony there, because what we enjoy once we build up our surgical load is that we like blocks of time, where if an independent doctor has a Tuesday or a Thursday, you know, and then they call out or go on vacation, those ORs would run empty. And what we try to do is achieve knowing that we can backfill those dates with surgical times with our doctors. So that's what we're hoping to do. It's a great strategic relationship, and it's one that, when implemented down there to achieve the volume we want to do, I think it'll work well with Steward, and that's why we're going there.
Okay. Remind us of the investment that you're going to be making to get up and running.
That's a great question. In the past, and over a year and a half ago, I've indicated when we would be going into a new platform that CapEx could be between $8 and $10 million. We think right now, as it relates to cash on cash, that it should be $1.5 million or less, and that we will probably incur leasehold purchases for equipment for up to another $2 to $2.5 million. So we believe it'll be $5 million or less without the leases. But when I say lease, property leases, but that's for going to GE or somebody and getting MRIs and CTs and equipment to outfit it. And then our direct cost of $1.5 million would be for the part of the tenant lease improvements that the landlord wouldn't be providing in the lease.
Okay. Well, you certainly got the balance sheet to do it now.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sounds good, Chris. I'll get back in the queue. Thanks.
Thank you.
Once again, star one if you do have a question or comment. And our next question comes from Evan Greenberg from Legends Fund. Please state your question. Evan, your line is live. Okay, we'll take our next question from Chris Irons from Geo Investing. Please state your question.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking the question. Sounds like things are humming along well, and I appreciate the transparency and the job you guys did in the PR and on the call. The previous gentleman actually took most of my difficult questions, so you can thank him for taking care of those. I did have one or two follow-ups. And forgive me if you covered this because I was a couple minutes late on the call when I got on, but I saw in the press release that your DSO has decreased by about 20%. I wanted to just see if you could give me a little bit of color on that. Do you see the DSO continuing to trend lower? Is this just kind of more regular volatility and lumpiness in the DSO? And can you just give me some colors for the reasons behind the downward trend, if that's something you see continuing?
Well, we're working very hard at taking days out and compressing the cash conversion cycle across the board. So we like to hope it's from our efforts, and we'll continue to see improvements in that over time. We're trying to refine the revenue cycle process and improve the training in the front end and then really go after it on a clean claim to start with.
And I think to capitalize on what Phil mentioned even earlier was that he got over $250,000 in from the VA that was sitting out a year. So when you can take $250,000 off the year and he's going to get another $300,000 that's probably 6 months old in, that should come in. The part I'd like to add to it, which we can't also calculate exactly yet, is the product mix. We will still go on to tell you that when if I switched all over to just spine surgery, we would go out to about 180 days because spines are complex. They get denied all the time, and you got to fight and invest almost 30% more dollars in trying to collect a spine case than you do a rotator cuff. So as our product mix moves along, that will change and be volatile to the type products. So will our average patient value. Our average patient value, if we continue to bring in lesser cases, which are upper extremities, and it's okay, if we do 3,000 of the expansion in those type cases, our APV might drop down and only run $8,000. Right now it's back to 8,600. But if we turned around and said we were lucky to have 3,000 spines, which I'm not indicating there's 3,000 spines to do, it would go to $12,000. So each one of those types of cases and then affects that DOS number, and it affects the value of what the actual entire case will be worth to the company.
Okay, yeah, thank you so much for that color. I appreciate that. Just one follow-up, and then I'll also jump back in the queue. You guys have mentioned 3,000 surgeries as a target from the expansion. I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit, and perhaps I missed this on the call. I had a little trouble getting on the call. I apologize. I'm not sure if you guys covered this, but if you can you kind of talk about what revenue you expect from this amount of surgeries and, the margins on these surgeries and whether or not they'll be better or worse than what you guys have historically had?
Right. So I'm not going to give guidance for this year, but what I can tell you, which would be a reflection that you could look forward on, our APV, if you took our patient value for Q1, was running around $8,600 per completed surgery. Therefore, if you do the math, and now we say we're going to be on a run rate of 6,000 for year end, as I sit additional doctors, it'll be the difference of next year doing hopefully 6,000 or 8,000 cases. If our mix remains the way it is today, the value has been historically shown somewhere around $8,500 to $9,000 per case. So, again, I think I'll be prepared to talk about 2019 as we get closer to the year end. You know, the mixes that we can tell that we always have to take into consider, like we said, is that Medicare alone, which is 30% of our business, so if the operation's down there for every $10 million, 30% of it is 7% higher than Brevard County.
Right.
So, you know, there's a higher rate, it's a different mix, and hopefully when we go one day to Georgia, if we were to go to Georgia, the rates are 30% higher than here. So as we're looking at it, what's nice about this, it's geographically still within driving distance but outside our county in a different payer reimbursement area that we can get under our belt with current management. I think another part that I'd like to mention, and I'm going to add to my prepared remarks now that I'm thinking about, we don't see, let me be very clear with this, and this is hypothetical. If we did $30 million last year and we were to do $60 million, we don't see corporate overhead exponentially following that trend. We think we have the staff in to do the PT, meaning management. We have the MRI people in to do ancillary. The CFO will expand. Chris will expand the medical crew to do it. But we don't see the corporate overhead. From the accounting, I don't think that's going to go up. So exponentially,
right,
we see our corporate overhead staying well below going up 25%, maybe 30%.
So you'll really be able to achieve some operating leverage, in other words.
Well, this in lies where I think we have the opportunity. We're going into a county that has a higher reimbursement state, and some of our payer contracts are based on your Medicare reimbursement. So they might pay you 120% of Medicare. If you start at 7% higher, everything's higher. You're going into an area where we're going to have contributing margins off these additional cases. So the economic scales of economy have everything set for us that even if we just went up X amount of dollars, that contributing margin will go to the bottom line much more than it has been. And so, you know, just look at PT. You know, as I mentioned and I continue to mention, you know, we're in a position here where PT did, let me just double check here, but PT did in 17, 3,800 cases in Q1. They had a value of $80 a case. In Q1 of 18, we did 10,000 cases. In April, we're hitting 1,000 a week. We're on a 4,000 case a month run rate, and we're hitting $87 a case. So things are working better that we have a nice value, a nice return, and now we can take the practice runs out, and all the current management's divided by those cases. So if you double the cases, again, the scales of economy will finally be recognized. So we think we have many ways that are not only going to increase top line, but it should start to increase the margin in between.
Well, thank you guys so much. Appreciate you taking the time to answer those questions, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from John Gay from The Quiet Investor. Please state your question.
Chris, I think I had a wrong supposition with regard to Steward. My position was that you would be using facilities already in place at Steward, but I derive now the idea that you are going to be opening other facilities apart from Steward's own facility. And if that is the case, do you really need to be exactly where Steward's hospitals already are?
Okay, so that's a great question. So therefore, we'll do a clarity to this. Approximately, well, over 66% of our cases will always be done in a hospital environment. So even up here in the Melbourne area or the East Coast where we have our own, I'll use hypothetical. If we were going to do 8,000 cases, we would probably only anticipate 2,000 being done in our surgery center. 6,000 other cases will be done in hospital facilities because of the health requirements of the patient, their age, the type of case, the complexity of it. So in the Vero Sebastian model, we don't have a surgery center there, so we will be utilizing the hospital as frequently and as best we can. So we're not going to jump in and put a surgery center down in Sebastian. So our goal is to utilize hospitals for almost all our surgery potential down there. And only if and when the backlog, say, at the end of 19 is that we're doing 3,000 cases and 1,000 can be done in a surgery center, would we talk to either Stuart or ourselves to implement our own surgery center down there to bring them in-house. But, you know, our core business is to do the surgery. Our doctor does them. We don't achieve any facility fees from Stuart by doing them at their place. What we get the advantage of going to a Stuart facility is their efficiencies. When sometimes we go to other hospitals, we can do 6 cases in a day, and we have some doctors doing 9 cases at Stuart. It's an efficiency model for a doctor to work in 8 hours. Can he do 3 cases or 9 cases? So when you have the efficiencies built in, which Stuart has demonstrated they can offer us, our doctors like to say, I'd like to take my preference to a Stuart facility.
Very good. That explains a lot. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Chris Palladino, and he's an individual investor. Please state your question.
Hi, guys. I just want to get in the weeds for a second. I had a question about the balance sheets. You're currently showing some significant employee loans on the balance sheets. So right now it's over 6% of current assets. I usually don't see that when I'm looking at a publicly traded company. Can you give us a little more explanation about these employee loans?
Yes, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, those are, as doctors come on board and ramp up, we essentially finance their startup costs for a new doctor. It takes a doctor anywhere from, you know, 3 to 12 months to become cash flow positive. So that is what those relate to. And then as they build their practice and they start performing these surgeries, they pay that down.
Okay, and so you went from 1.15 last year to 1.1268 right now. Has there been turnover in that, or is that just growth on top of?
Some of that Heinz and Dow. Okay.
And then another piece of that is our partners at the VAC Center, Dr. Hines and Dr. Data, have about 500,000 of that, 400 plus thousand of that as well.
Which is not our responsibility. When we took them over, it was on the books, and it's not our obligation to pay that note, but being we consolidate their financials, we have to state it. So 500 of that came when we took over the VAC Center and remains their responsibility. So in summary, when a doctor starts in year one, he gets a percentage of his net collected revenues, and at the end of the day, he gets a drawer. That's not a salary. We don't technically lose money. So if you give him enough so that he can eat and live, it takes him a year to ramp up. The more we ramp up, the more we send them and they earn their money, it's negative. It takes them with about a year, a little less than a year. If we're really good at what we do, we've broken even on negative cash flow as short as 3 months, and some take a year. And that, again, depends on the cycle and the amount of the drawer. So it becomes a negative owed amount from them until they have enough excess in their income bucket, and then that becomes bonus to them above their drawer.
Great. That's very clear. And then just to clarify then with what we inherited, we do expect that those employee debts that we inherited are collectible.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Steve Hyland from Hyland Capital. Please state your question.
Hi, Chris. Congratulations on a great quarter.
Thank you.
Pretty much all my questions were actually answered, but just sort of a follow-up on the previous one. Would the loans that you're giving to the surgeons to sort of ramp up their business, is that counted in the CapEx that you were talking about earlier?
Yes. And that's a great question. I can sit here and ask with Phil right now. The doctors, if we bring in green doctors that have no book of business, that number becomes significantly higher. What we have done in most occasions right now is under our new employment agreements, we have capped each one's negative drawer to where it's a manageable number. So in no anticipation do I think we couldn't double our volume and not have that loan balance hit $1 million. I think it won't hit $500,000 more. So we capped it with a management amount to just say that if we give a doctor a drawer of X and he's ramping or she's ramping up slower than we thought, we can go in and adjust their drawer so that it doesn't exceed our business amount of CapEx that we want to put into it. But I think I'm dancing around your question. For the total amount of $5 million to do the growth we want, that includes that amount, yes.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Michael Fillensroyn from J.H. Dorby. Please state your question.
Hey there, guys. This is Randy Benito from J.H. Dorby. Michael had to leave the call. Congrats on the quarter, Chris. I'm relatively new to the company. Maybe you could touch on Crane Creek and how they expect it to trend going into Q2 and the rest of the year.
Right. So thank you for taking Bill's position. But we are implementing at the Crane Creek Surgery Center our capabilities to maximize what I call our surgeries that might not need to be in a hospital. So when you do a carpal tunnel in a hospital, that takes a surgeon about 2 minutes to do, and we've never had the efficiencies down at our own surgery center because we weren't in control of management. So doctors were frustrated a year ago. So today, for me to give you a dollar guidance, which I haven't done for the entire company for this year, we're going to state that, again, in global numbers, when we do 8,000 surgeries a year, and it's not if, it's when Florida does that, we think that center will max out at 200 cases per month, about 2,400 of those cases per year. And so we don't wake up to say, what more can we move there just to move a little bit to it? But what it really comes down to is the doctor picks the best location for the safety of the patient where it's to be done. So that's what we're working on. We're very proud that Luis, our administrator that we brought in to take over the facility, could turn something around that was losing $700,000 to turn it profitably around this quick. and that in itself will lend itself that he's renegotiating his contracts as we speak. He's renegotiating his purchasing. He's updating his equipment as required to do the different type surgeries our surgeons want to do. So I'm going to still put that back that I'm going to wait another quarter or two to make sure we can see our guidance grow, and before I put it out specifically, which I think will be at the end of Q3 for 19, that we'll know what we're doing. We'll be done practicing by then to really know what we think 19 will sum up to be.
Okay. Quick follow-up question. Is the buyback still in effect, and how many shares have you bought, and what's left?
Right, so we approved a 1 million share buyback. We bought back approximately 250,000 plus or minus a little bit.
270.
Okay, so 270. So the remaining balance is open for us to do it, but we have not been in the market utilizing our cash to buy back any in Q1.
Okay, thank you. Once again, I appreciate you taking our call, and congrats on the quarter.
Thank you.
As a reminder, that's star one if you do have a question. And our next question comes from Howard Halpern from Taglich Brothers. Please state your question.
Good morning, guys. I'm very new to the story, so just a sort of a basic question. What is the value proposition that you offer for payers and for physicians?
Let's restate that again. I'm sorry. Maybe I want to make sure I answer it properly.
Yeah. What is the value proposition that you provide to attract physicians and to, better serve, I guess, payer contracts?
Right. So probably the very first core one for the physicians and for the patients, because I got to first start with, the core issue: if the patient likes it, you'll have all the business you want. So first we start, when we go back to the patient, we're happy that 3 out of 4 of our patients currently being seen do not require a surgery. And that is not normal in the industry. When you bring in 4 fresh people that need rotator cuffs, we have seen and witnessed where up to sometimes 2 out of 4 get a surgery. So that in itself is an issue. So we think we have higher patient flow because we do less surgeries on patients. Our next one that's big, and it's always been our motto from the beginning, is that we allow doctors to be doctors. So many of our doctors have either tried, explored, worked for a hospital, opened up their own practice, tried to run the payroll, tried to do the monthly and weekly cash flows. As a single provider, they struggle to try to get into network contracts with Blue Cross Aetnas. And so if you take the sincere doctor that's been trained to be an orthopedic, and I'm not talking down to anybody here to say there's a bunch out there that all have their business degrees and their M&Bs and they all want to run around and then tell, I know how to run a practice, I know how to do this. Well, maybe that's what they should do and become practice administrators. But I think there's a definite line in between to where if they really truly want to be a doctor, and then we can attract them to a facility where they used to in an 8-hour day complete 6 surgeries, and because of what we have the capability to do, that doctor this Friday went from 8 3 years ago to 13 in our outpatient surgery center, and he's still leaving at 4:30 in the afternoon. He didn't even realize it went so efficient. So he's actually working less and getting more completed in a shorter period of time. So from the doctor's perspective, they see after about 6 months their efficiencies on productivity go up 20 to 30%. They see their life in the world of managing the back of the house operation stress go down by 30%, and it achieves their quality of life to go up to where we actually have some of the doctor's wives call and say, God, I haven't seen him so happy in 10 years. So without a doubt, from the doctor perspective, it's there. From the patient's perspective, you got to remember, most payers are now mandating. They're doing what we're volunteering to do. And that is a payer will say, you can't get this surgery approved unless you fail conservative care. So when a patient comes in, If you're a single doctor sitting on a road with a 2,000 square foot office and all you know is all I make money on is when I do surgeries, he's inclined, and we know doctors that are more inclined to do a surgery on every other patient. Well, the payers are coming out to say, we want to see this patient fail conservative care. So at our facility, we just instilled that into the workup to say, you need to first get your MRI, get your x-ray, and go to therapy. And what we found was when we did that, they really were right. We turned around and 3 out of 4 people didn't need the surgery. And if we really want to get into the grind of it here, we make more money not doing a surgery than doing a surgery. Because the ancillary services of running a patient and only spending $2,000 or $3,000 on them to get them healed makes a happy patient, he didn't need surgery, holds a higher margin than the surgery does for us, then makes the doctor happy. So as long as you have enough volume to do that, that's the uniqueness of our model, is that we really think we offer that and do a great job. So now the value proposition will be, and it'll take some time for the payer. It's the third person in the room.
Yep.
And we believe we will be able to demonstrate with historical numbers shortly that when payers come into communities, if, and I'm going to use a generic number, but say they pay $1,000 out of each person's premium for orthopedic care. There's three things that chew up the biggest amount of the $5,000 or $7,000 premium: orthopedics, oncology, and cardiology, the three largest utilizations of a health plan. And so if one day we can start showing them for each 1,000 lives you have insured in our territory, you'll spend less per insured life because less people are getting the expensive surgery, the payers are, I don't want to say today they've recognized it, they've now agreed we can start measuring that. And so that's our goal right now, is to start measuring per insured life. And I think no different than even what Stewart has done up in the Northeast, they do that in their organization. They're at risk with patients, so they know exactly what a patient's life costs to manage. And it's a really good feeling when you can run a business to say, if we do less surgeries, we'll make even more money and we'll save the insurance people money. And better yet, the doctor has a great life and the patient really likes not getting a surgery and they're cured. So that's our platform, and it's been demonstrated to work well.
Wow, thanks for the info, and that sounds great. And keep it going.
And if you think you need a surgery, come here. You might be one of the lucky three.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Anthony Marchese, another private investor. Please state your question.
Yeah, hi, Chris. Great job turning the company around, and hopefully, you know, your net income positive for the foreseeable future. Question regarding uplisting. If you could just talk a little bit about what your perception is in terms of your shareholder base, what you're doing to, again, uplist. Do you meet all the requirements? Just if you could just briefly share your plans.
Yeah, great, Anthony. I appreciate the call. And so one of our last steps was to have the independent board set. It's a minimum 3 members, majority. We will be now including that by having 4 independent members. Other than that, the application has been highlighted in green that both we feel over at the New York and at the NASDAQ we could uplist. Our shareholder equity is proper. We have in excess of 500 or 600 shareholders, so our minimum shareholder requirement is there. The very last part is market cap of $50 million, which we're right below that, and that will be cured if and when our stock price is above $1.50. At $1.50, the next thing would be minimum stock price to uplist. So the New York Exchange is at $2. The NASDAQ is at $3. We're going to run Q1, 2, and 3 here and stay side by side to weigh the differences. Nobody ever wants to hear of a 1-for-2 reverse, but if it's for the purpose to uplist to get to a national exchange, I wouldn't want to just do that because they typically fail miserably. But yet the benefits of being on a national exchange might outweigh that. So we're going to see organically how we perform through Q1 and 2 and keep that decision and then bring that to the independent board to measure. But to specifically answer your question, we'll think that sooner than later, by the end of May, we will be fully in compliance to uplist other than our stock price.
And Chris, just remind me again, if you could just break down the percentage ownership of the company, you know, insiders versus outsiders at this point.
Right. So as of insiders right now, that hasn't changed. It's around 7.2 million shares, which was, I think he's actually came off at the former CFO, Donald Buttar, has about 400,000 maybe or thereabout, and then myself. So the whole world and for the new investors know that my shares were acquired when I contribute the office building to the public entity in late 2010. We contribute the property at a value of $12 million. We owed five. I got 7 million shares at $1 each in value, so I had my 7 million shares. We then sold that building 2 years ago for $15.5 million, paid off the debt, and that gave us working capital without dilution of about $8 million. So the insiders are specifically, as of right now, myself, and that's what I would know to be. Phil, that's what we believe it to be today that we've been indicating.
Great. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.
As a reminder, that's star one if you'd like to ask a question. And our next question comes from Daryl Zontes, a private investor. Please state your question.
Yeah, hi, Chris. You mentioned Georgia a little while back, and I was just kind of curious, are we eyeing any site in Georgia for further expansion?
Well, you know, without a doubt, and Daryl, good to hear from you, sir. Without a doubt, we are not just limited to following Stewart. Stewart has 34 other locations in 10 other states. I said hypothetically it might be Georgia. Before we don't close our doors to everything. We're not exclusive to going with Stewart. It's a two-way street. If we perform well, Stewart will want us to go to their other locations, and we have only been practicing now for about 69 days that we've been together since we've closed our deal with them. So we think we're a good steward of us, no pun intended, and we think that with Stewart, they'll recognize our values as we work closely together. So if I had an even up bet to go to a Stewart state versus a non-Stewart state, why wouldn't I want to go where I know what I get? So prior to that, Georgia was a higher reimbursement state by almost 25% on their Medicare and third-party payers. It's a rich state for reimbursement, and doctors like that area, and it's not the hustle and bustle of, say, New York or Jersey. So that's why I brought it up, because we did some preliminary work there. We did some preliminary work looking into Pennsylvania. But as of right now, I think everybody, although that I'll start working on that after Q2, 3, and 4 to know where we're going next year, I think we have enough here to have the opportunity to double our company with capability, and I want to maximize Florida, do this right, and not make any wrong turns right now.
All right. Sounds good, Chris, and keep up good work. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Another gentle reminder, if you do have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
I think we'll take one more call, Karen, if that's okay. We have a hard...
And actually, there appear to be no further questions at this time.
All right. Well, then, I'd like to thank everybody for taking the time. I'm sorry it went a little longer. I noted my prepared remarks were only 23 minutes, but I think it's healthy that everybody learned and listened and got additional information, which I hope will allow you all to make a proper decision when and if not investing with us or in the company. With that, I'd like to thank you. We'll keep you updated as some of the events we discussed will materialize and start to work. And until our next call, thank you, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's webcast. We thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and have a great day.